Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Monday, March 2nd, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me already in the month of March. And my goodness, have we been through a lot in January and February thus far. And it looks like the roller coaster ride is going to be continuing throughout the remainder of 2020, which is what we have been noting here for a long, long while. My apologies for being away the past couple of days. I know the last podcast was on last Wednesday. I meant to, at the end of that podcast, to inform the audience that I was going to be taking a long weekend and that I would be returning today. And of course, as soon as I finished it and was starting to upload it online and everything, I was like, oh man, I forgot to tell them that I'm not going to be here the next couple of days. And then go figure, it's in one of the craziest weeks we have seen on Wall Street in a very, very long time. In fact, it was record-breaking in regards to the 10% decline from an all-time high, the rapidity of it, how fast it occurred in the span of only, what was it, 5-7 trading days, was quite remarkable. So we're going to talk about that because there was a lot going on last week. I mean, the Dow Jones Industrial Average shed nearly 4,000 points. That's remarkable. It's remarkable. And it was history in the making. Now, today, of course, was a little bit of a reversal. Is this going to be a dead cat bounce? Even though the return today, the upside today, was somewhat of a blockbuster to the upside, 4 or 5%, depending on the index. But we saw some blowout numbers last week as well, down 2%, down 3%, down 4%. We saw this, especially intraday. What took place, folks, was what we had been discussing here for a very long time, that the day of reckoning was going to come. I don't think that was it, not by far. I think that was the precursor of things to come, just like the fourth quarter of 2018 was a sign of things to come. Because you cannot build an economy, a market economy, any economy for that matter, on the back of easy, cheap credit and debt. You cannot do it. It is a foundation built on sand, and you can only get so far with that. Yeah, you might be able to build a nice structure on top of it for a little bit. You might be able to throw in some Italian marble, some nice crown molding. Some nice artists can come in there and do a fantastic paint job. You might have some great carpenters doing great woodwork, and everything could look fantastic. Great furniture, things to just set up perfectly, picturesque. For Architectural Digest to come in there and just take photo after photo after photo. And for everybody to think that this is the greatest house on the block. Not realizing that it is built on a foundation of sand. And it's just going to be a matter of time, unfortunately, till all of that comes crumbling down. Especially when you have some sort of outside exogenous shock to the system. And that is what we are seeing here today with COVID-19. Now, this is an excuse. This is a convenient excuse for central bankers and federal governments the world over to point the finger at an exogenous shock such as COVID-19 as the cause for worry, the cause for concern, the cause for a global economic slowdown. Newsflash. We have been in a global economic slowdown for years. There is no strong, miraculous growth coming out of the woodwork anywhere. We are on the downside. This is the ebbs and flows of things. This is not to be taken as me being pessimistic or negative. This is just me being realistic. This is the natural ebb and flow of how markets work. It's most definitely how they're supposed to operate when it comes to discovering fair value. Price discovery is what markets are all about, especially if you want to contend that we have a free market capitalistic system. By definition, we are seeking price discovery, which allows markets to clear. And all that simply means is you can have a buyer and a seller come together at an agreed upon price. Boom, the market's clear. You move on. And you want that to happen with as little, with as few distractions and distortions as possible. But when you have the federal governments around the world throwing stimulus after stimulus after stimulus at the economy, when you have stimulus after stimulus after stimulus from central banks with liquidity and a whole bunch of other gimmicks being thrown into the system, there are an enormous amount of distortions. And it's not as if people are truly acting irrationally, although in some instances, they most definitely are. But a lot of people, a lot of businesses, a lot of entrepreneurs are simply looking at the price of whatever good or service they might be offering, or a financial asset price, to make a decision. But when there are so many distortions embedded within that price, look out below. Because you can end up seeing those types of very volatile weeks that we just witnessed last week, or really for the past week and a half. That's how quickly it can come. Remember, you take the escalator up, you take the elevator down. I say it here quite frequently. And that's pretty much exactly what we have seen and witnessed over the past 7 months, since September, October, 5, 6, 7 months, when the Federal Reserve said, okay, we have a one-off situation, nothing to see here, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain with the overnight repo market. That's just a one-off. It's the end of the third quarter. Taxes are due. There's some stuff going on with the Treasury. Nothing to see here. We'll take care of it. Well, they've been taking care of it, and it wasn't temporary. It wasn't a one-off. They've been doing it on a nightly basis for the past several months, in addition to an expansion of their balance sheet. Now, they tell us it's not quantitative easing because they're just buying really short-term paper. 1, 2, 3 month Treasury bills. That's it. We're not going out really far. We're not out there further on the yield curve. We're actually getting a coupon. So it's technically not quantitative easing. Okay, let them have that argument. We don't buy it here, but okay, let them say it. It makes no difference. There's still an expansion of the balance sheet. And a lot in life, especially in the financial markets, perception is reality. So when Wall Street and a whole bunch of investors and traders go and they see that the Federal Reserve's balance sheet is expanding, they say, well, what difference does it honestly make from quantitative easing? What do I care what a bunch of eggheads at the Federal Reserve tell me as to what the technicality is? I see the same thing. It's the same difference. They're doing something, balance sheet gets bigger, liquidity in the market, I go buy stocks. And that led to the melt-up. And it led to people thinking, oh, well, everything is just fantastic. And you compound this problem with margin. You compound this problem with a lot of retail sites such as E-Trade, Charles Schwab, TD Ameritrade, all these guys now competing very aggressively, but now they've removed a lot of them, basically entirely, any type of trading commission. So if that used to be maybe somewhat of a concern for people, well, it's going to cost me $10 to enter this trade and then dollars to get out of it or whatever the case might be, that might have been somewhat of a hurdle rate for people to make those decisions. Now, oh, this stock market's going up. Trump is just keeps touting it. And every time he says it's going up, it keeps going up. The Federal Reserve keeps printing money. And every time they keep printing money, it keeps going up. I can't lose. Now E-Trade, TD Ameritrade, they all removed my fees. I'm just going to go to the hilt. And they got walloped last week. Got absolutely decimated. Because a lot of this is the retail investor. That's the average Joe. They call that dumb money. Dumb money. Because typically, once the average Joe gets in, all of the profits have been made. All of the upside has pretty much already occurred. You're supposed to buy low, sell high. Well, you got everybody and their mother jumping in at all-time highs. What do you think is going to happen? That's why I tell you, the risk-reward scenario over the past several months, as far as I was concerned, was concerning. Was concerning because it was all built off of the back of easy, cheap money. That's all it was. It was a con game. It was a confidence game. And that's not how you run a show. That's not how you run your ship. That's not a solid, strong foundation that is going to weather storm after storm after storm. It's very shaky ground, and that is not a foundation you want to build your economy on. This is common sense. And there's nothing that is preventing us from doing the right thing, except that it's going to be a little bit harder than just turning on the printing press. It's going to be a little bit harder than actually keeping a promise that our politicians make us, but they obviously never keep trillion-dollar deficits. I mean, with no end in sight. And again, this does not take into consideration a recession. So we're already at $1 trillion as far as deficits are concerned annually. Well on track for that to occur. Now with this slowdown due to COVID-19 and the ripple effects that this will continue to have at least through the first half of 2020. And I hope they do find, or they can contain this, and that they can find a vaccine and develop a vaccine. I'm sure they will. But it's going to take a year, 18 months to get that for mass production. And even that is best case scenario. So this is going to have long-term effects that exacerbated the already existing conditions in the global economy that was already slowing down. This is just like the trade war that we were talking about for as long as that was going on. It's slowing things down further. It is exacerbating the problem. It is not the problem. It's exacerbating. It just adds, it's just piling on to the mess. And with COVID-19, you have another compounding problem with the trade deal, or at least phase one of it, because there are travel bans to and from China, and we're surely not going to start taking in a whole bunch of product from China or sending it over there too if people can potentially become infected. So that's delaying that. And we have our doubts as to how spectacular and phenomenal that was, because it's not fantastic and remarkable. Simply gets us back, maybe, big maybe, to where we were 2 years ago before the whole debacle even started. So, what took place over the past 7 trading days? All of that funny money that was printed globally, not just from the Federal Reserve, but globally, got wiped out. It got wiped out. In a week, trillions of dollars of quote-unquote stock market value got wiped out in a week. Now, it's no surprise that there's going to be some sort of bounce back today, which is what we witnessed. I'm personally surprised that it went down in a straight line last week. Like I always like to say here, nothing goes straight down, nothing goes straight up. But that tells you how the markets are starting to wake up to potentially the severity of COVID-19. But more importantly, I think the markets are really starting to sniff out the underlying problems that are taking place globally, those same data points that we talk about here all the time. That reality is starting to sink in. A recent title of one of our podcasts. All of those things are starting to come to fruition. All of them are starting to come to the foreground because people can no longer ignore them. They did one hell of a job last year, printing money, jawboning, cutting interest rates. Corporate earnings didn't go up. Corporate earnings peaked in 2014, 6 years ago. 6 years ago. But you have multiple expansion. You have the promise of great things to come, and then they don't. And we're going to have more promises of great things to come this year, and they won't materialize either. Central banks bailed out financial assets last year. They had to use some of their reserves. They had to use some of their ammunition. Now they have even less ammunition. But they still have some. So is it possible that they can, quote-unquote, reflate these financial assets, particularly stocks? The short answer is yes. And we have to say that because we just spent a year witnessing that on hyperdrive. In fact, it's been much longer than that. It's really been a decade of this central bank experiment that is like the Twilight Zone, which is extremely dangerous, which has really starting to show how thin it is running now with diminishing marginal returns. Undoubtedly, it has kicked in diminishing marginal returns on the effectiveness of money printing because there is no underlying economic growth taking place. We have some of the largest economies in the world in recession or headed to recession. So what do you think is going to happen? If printing money was a panacea, then why did it take so long for central banks and governments to figure this out? And people in general, why did it take so long? Because it's not a panacea. Now, you might be able to convince markets that it is when it comes to trade wars, when it comes to certain mergers and acquisitions that may have gone wrong, maybe a certain bankruptcy that takes place within corporate America or somewhere else. Those things are man-made. What about something like this, COVID-19, or any other type of exogenous, nature-made type of scenario? And of course, I know there's a lot of conspiracies out there that the Chinese have developed this. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole right now until we have more evidence. But you understand my point. This is not man-made. This is a supply shock. This is a demand shock. So what is printing more money going to do? If you're not traveling, what's printing more money going to do? Are you going to all of a sudden get on a plane? Or all of these travel bans that have been instituted for a month now and continuing, are they miraculously going to be lifted because there is a coordinated effort amongst the world's largest central banks and governments to print money and to throw fiscal stimulus at this problem? It just doesn't make any sense. So the question is, how long lived will this next potential rally last? Or is it going to die very quickly? Because that was one of the biggest risks that I have been stating here since this podcast has been online. Because last year we went through Deutsche Bank's, I think it was 30 risks for the markets. We went through all of them. And then this year we went through the top the 20 risks for 2020 from Deutsche Bank as well. And the one that always has me the most concerned, and I do believe this will take place one day. I wish I could tell you when, but I don't know. But it will happen, that the efforts undertaken by central banks and federal governments the world over will not work. They will not work. They can throw everything and the kitchen sink at it to reflate asset prices, to create some sort of calm or confidence or stability within the global economy, but it doesn't work because now you're shooting blanks. Now diminishing marginal returns, you're completely shot in the foot, and now it's probably negative. You're doing more damage. Everything that you're pumping into the patient is doing more harm to the patient than good. That will happen. And when that day comes, look out below. Because it might look, it may very well make last week look like child's play. Last week could have been a sign of things to come. I believe that. I believed that the fourth quarter of 2018 was a sign of things to come. I was personally surprised that the Federal Reserve, in conjunction with all the BS headlines from the Trump administration, were able to continue to pump the markets. But it did. But it did. So can it happen again? Sure can, because it just happened last year. So it can happen again, but I just hope this audience understands that it's not real. That it's perception. And I would hope that this audience would rather have an economy that is built off of the truth, off of some facts, off of free market capitalism, and not off of a fraud that has been going on for much, much too long, which is why the Federal Reserve needs to be abolished, why the federal income tax needs to be abolished as well, if you really want to start solving problems in this country and around the world. I would hope other countries would adopt the same thing when it comes to their central banks and their forms of taxation as well. But I'm more concerned with what takes place in the United States of America, and I hope we could lead by example by doing those things. But I hear nobody in the White House making such claims. I hear nobody on the Democratic side of the presidential race saying these things. I hear nobody in Congress in either party saying these things. So it's just going to be a continuation of what we have. Nothing gets solved, broken promises, continuation of the status quo. Continuation of the military-industrial complex, a continuation of the largest banks on Wall Street making money hand over fist, corporate gifts from the Federal Reserve and from the federal government to sustain one business after the next, the President of the United States continuing to call for negative interest rates, even Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, is calling for the Federal Reserve to intervene and to basically bail out corporations, which is unbelievable given her stance on everything. That's the wrong medicine. That's actually more of the problem. We have zombie companies walking around and have for quite a while. We have 40% of listed companies. 40% of traded companies. Unprofitable. Unprofitable. We have commodity prices that have been tanking. Now, of course, today, they back too. They got a huge dead cat bounce today. We'll see if that's sustained. But we do have oil. We got WTI at $47.75, and we got Brent at 50, let's just call it $53 a barrel. So a big rebound in the price of oil. And of course, you have OPEC plus Russia now talking about more supply cuts to get the price up. Makes no difference, folks. This is the same song and dance that we have witnessed time after time, month after month. There has been some sort of external shock, whether it was tensions between Iran and the United States, whether it was some sort of, again, something with OPEC plus Russia making a decision to cut production in attempts to get prices up. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The demand side of the equation is too weak, and it's getting weaker. And net-net, there's just a lot of supply on the market. And this audience knows why. Because we have zombie companies going around. Because we've had cheap money sloshing around. And lo and behold, it makes its way to the energy sector. It makes its way to every sector. But a lot of the junk bonds that exist are within the energy sector. And they have to service that debt. But when the price of their commodity, whether it be gas or oil or some other secondary or tertiary product from the process, if those prices continue to go down, what do you think is going to happen? It makes it more difficult to service those debt payments. So what do you have to do, potentially? You got to lay people off. And we're starting to see that. And now you're going to start to see a downward loop that is not going to be stopped by printing money or by doing other fiscal measures at the federal level, whether that be here in the United States or elsewhere. Because you have markets rallying today, and as we do this in the evening, we have a lot of markets that are rallying today, or Tuesday, I should say, over in the Asia sectors, the Asian indexes. Why? Because they are expecting that free money is coming, that free money is on its way. That all of a sudden, because there was a huge, huge shakeout, 10% decline, that now the central bank is going to come back to the rescue, that now federal governments are going to take a coordinated effort to make sure everything's okay. Forget COVID-19 that continues to spread. Forget the locust swarms that continue to spread. And if they don't get that under control in about 2 weeks, look out, you're going to have a second wave of locusts coming because of their offspring is now growing basically to the potential where they can turn into swarms. So if that happens, especially as we make our way into the harvest season in some African nations, if they wipe out their first harvest, these poor people are suffering enough. They're really going to be in dire straits. And it's not just in Africa, and it's making its way further, deeper into Africa, but it's also across the Arabian Peninsula, in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, in Pakistan, in India, might even make its way into China. And you have some Chinese officials who are actually concerned that that could turn into a problem as well. You might think I'm crazy talking about it, but we focus on a lot of things here that are interconnected. And we have a deeper appreciation than most that you're going to find on the mainstream media, especially the financial mainstream media, talking about these intricate interconnectedness of things, because we talk about the global protests here all the time. Because the final straw that broke the camel's back is just a little bit of an increase in the cost of living. Just a slight increase. 5% tax here, 20%, 20 cents here, whatever the case may be. Just a little bit more from people. And they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they say, that's it. We're done. What do you think is going to happen if these locusts destroy millions of acres worth of crops for people and for livestock, where people make their living, it's their livelihood? What do you think is going to happen? More protests? If people understand what's going on in their countries, they understand how competent or incompetent their respective governments are. They going to take this anymore if their children are starving to death more than what they already are in some instances, depending on what country you're talking about? It's all interconnected. The question is, will these people stand up in some of these countries where you typically don't see that? But are they going to reach the end of their rope too, where they have nothing to lose? Time will tell. I hope they can contain these locusts, but it doesn't look like they're going to. I hope that we can contain coronavirus, COVID-19, but it doesn't appear that that's going to be the case either. So these markets are extremely choppy. These markets are betting that there is going to be a coordinated effort among central banks the world over, and we have the Reserve Bank of Australia cutting rates tonight to an all-time low of 0.5%. 0.5%, an all-time low. Reserve Bank of Australia cutting it from 0.75. With the statement that they are willing to go further if they have to. Of course they are. Of course they're willing to do it, and of course they're going to be more than happy to do it when that time comes, and it will. And it will, because they're taking a big hit when it comes to their education sectors and their travel sectors, and of course, the Australian dollar is a commodity currency. They're getting hit on that as well because of the massive slowdown that is taking place in China in particular, but really in Asia in general. We have more cases of COVID-19 around the world. Respective authorities are still not calling this a pandemic, even though by definition it is. A lot of the cases here in the United States, which has now topped 100, we have 6 deaths taking place out of Washington State nursing home facility. With a lot of questions that remain unanswered as to how that got into a nursing home. And of course, older people and people with health conditions are more susceptible to contracting the virus and also either suffering from severe illness, meaning they're going to have to be in the hospital, they'll be hospitalized, or they could pass away. And when you read off the list of conditions that could cause things to get even worse or for people to potentially contract COVID-19. You say, oh my goodness, if it really breaks out here in the United States, we're screwed. Because you're talking about obesity being a factor, diabetes being a factor, hypertension being a factor, being old being a factor. Well, what is that? Half the country right there. Maybe more. So we better hope and pray it doesn't break loose in this country, but it's already here. And we have a general understanding of its growth potential. And it grows exponentially, which I think is in large part why a lot of people have discounted it, why they haven't seen it, why they don't understand it, because it's very difficult, and it is, for the human brain to understand exponential growth and to grasp when that jump from steady as she goes to boom, when is that's going to take place, being able to identify that. Well, you know, we live in a world of exponential. I have a good sense as to when these things happen or when they're likely to happen because I wrote about them in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. One thing after the other was about exponential growth. One after the other. In the investment section of the book, we talk about the miracle of compounding interest. You put $1 in every month, $100 in every month, $1,000 in every month. You do that for 10 years, you do that for 20 years, 30 years, and then boom, you really start making a lot of money. Just because the money that is the base, your principal, now it's starting to earn a ton of interest. Steady as she goes. That's exponential. And it's hard to pick up because the human mind likes to see things in a very linear way. Steady as she goes, step by step by step. Very predictable. But exponential is not predictable. It's 1, it's 2, it's 3, and then it's 100. And that's what's taking place with COVID-19. We don't believe the numbers out of China, the Chinese Communist Party. We don't believe them for a second. I have my doubts about a lot of the numbers here in the United States. But they are tracking, they are mimicking very closely the numbers and statistics on a proportional basis from China. So that has me somewhat concerned. But there are several states here in the United States that have confirmed cases. Some of them are travel-related. Some of them are known to be person-to-person contact. And some of it is community spread, which simply means they don't know where it came from. They don't know how a certain individual contracted the virus, which is worrisome. But that's just what it means, community spread. When you hear that, that's just what that means. They don't know where it came from. It's a general term. It's the community. They got it from the community, but we don't know what individual, what location, etc., etc. So when you hear that, that's what it means. I think we talked last Wednesday about Donald Trump's remarks. He gave a press briefing in the White House briefing room in regards to coronavirus, and that there were 15 individuals at that time, that this was not inevitable, that it was going to grow, this, that, and the other, that the people who had it with those 15 were all going to be fine and dandy. There's nothing to see here. Pay no attention to it. And then, boom, here we are with over 100 cases as we sit here this evening. If this continues to follow the same trajectory as to what we have seen, what we have known to take place in China, what we have known and really started to see in South Korea, what we're witnessing in places like France and Italy, we have 100 today. We're likely to have 1,000 by next week, if not more, because it all comes down to how many tests we can run. If you don't test, then you don't know. But if you start to run the tests, well, you can imagine that those numbers are going to go up. And we even had President Trump starting to concede that it is likely that the number of cases is going to go up. It doesn't mean this is a cause for panic, cause for worry. But when you understand the situation that we have globally, and I've been saying this here for quite a while, once I picked this up from an analyst and I shared this with this audience, that it's not just a question of the mortality rate, but a question of the severe acute cases. Because how much stress are you going to put on the healthcare system? How many businesses are going to shut down, at least temporarily? How many school districts are going to shut down because you don't want this to spread amongst children and then obviously get into the household and then it spreads further from there? That's the question. It's not just a question of the death rate, because I see so many people online who I follow when it comes to markets or politics or what have you, and we have diverged. A lot of times I'm in agreement with these people, but when it comes to COVID-19, I have been consistent from day one saying, I think something is amiss with this one. I think this is going to be something a little bit bigger than what a lot of the crackheads on Wall Street are saying, and even a lot of people I respect and listen to and follow on YouTube or on the financial media, wherever it might be. I said, I don't think you're right about this one. And I'm sticking with my guns. I still think COVID-19 is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. I hope I'm wrong, by the way. You understand this. But I'm just trying to be realistic. I'm just trying to offer my analysis here. And with what we've seen, I've been proven right. And that's an unfortunate event, because it means people are getting sick. It means some people are dying. But that's the way it is. Because a lot of people, who I've diverged with, say, how many people die from XYZ, or how many people die from the flu? And then you take it in the grand scheme of things, 7.5 billion people on the planet. Maybe you're talking about the United States, 330, 360 million Americans. A few people died. What's the big deal? That's how it starts. That's what I'm talking about with exponential growth. It's 1, it's 2, it's 3, it's 4, it's 20, it's 50, it's 100, it's 1,000, it's 2,000, it's 10,000. That's how quickly things can get out of control. That's exponential. That's the concern. And we know those numbers out of China are fake. We know they're not true. It's a multiple. Worse than what they have reported. Because they didn't have all the testing kits. So they might have just said, somebody died of pneumonia, somebody died of a heart attack. Who knows what they would have said? They didn't test them. They don't know. Be 5, 10 times, maybe even more. But we do know that they shut down half of their economy. Not going to work, not producing this, not buying that, not going out, stay in. I don't think you do that for the common flu or for the common cold. I think there's something brewing underneath. And again, I don't take my marching orders from the crackheads on Wall Street. Because, again, you can go out and you can listen and read articles from epidemiologists, virologists, microbiologists, the people who do this for a living. I'm going to put more weight on what they say than what the president says, what central bankers saying, what the crackheads on Wall Street are going to tell me. Now, a couple other things before I go. I want to talk about gold and silver prices because I'm sure a lot of you have seen that there was a big pullback in gold and silver. And I still strongly believe that both precious metals and others are in the midst of a long-term bull market. So this is the opportunity, in my opinion, to buy more. You buy low, you sell high, right? A lot of this pullback, a lot of this drawback in the price of gold and silver in particular, from what I've been reading and understanding, which makes sense to me, is last week there was a ton of margin calls that took place. People borrowing money to buy stocks long, blah, blah, blah. Didn't happen, didn't pan out. Big sell-off. Okay, you got call on those margins. You got to make good. Well, they were making good. They were making profits on gold and silver. So they had to sell their winners to cover their losses in the stock market. So that drew the price of gold and silver down. Again, I think that's an opportunity to get more, to be diversified. Because governments the world over, they're coming to destroy their currencies. That's what they're doing. It's what they're doing right in front of us. Lower interest rates, negative interest rates, quantitative easing, interventions in the repo market, liquidity, liquidity, liquidity. They're crushing them. So you better have some sort of hedge. You better be some sort of diversified. Precious metals should serve as that type of diversification. Look into it. And then lastly, with the politics, presidential race, we have Super Tuesday taking place tomorrow. I think it's about 14 states in play, if I remember correctly. A lot of delegates can be awarded, and a handful of contenders have dropped out. Tom Steyer suspended his campaign. Pete Buttigieg suspended his campaign. Amy Klobuchar suspended her campaign. So it's whittling down. We knew this was going to take place. This is the natural order and events of things. Former mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, is finally going to be on the ballot on these states. So we'll see if his ad campaign, his unorthodox campaign, is going to pay dividends. But I do believe he'll even remain in the race a little bit longer unless he just completely gets destroyed. But right now it appears to be 2-3-man race. Sanders, Biden, Bloomberg. Senator Elizabeth Warren is still in the hunt. Somewhat delusional, I think, but maybe she'll surprise somewhere. Maybe she'll surprise, but she's probably going to be next to suspend her campaign. And there might still be a straggler. Tulsi Gabbard might still be on the ballot. I really don't know what she's doing at this juncture. I was hopeful that she would, you know, pull better than what she did, get on more of the debates, but she didn't, unfortunately. So I don't know if she thinks she has some sort of internal numbers that, oh, we're going to do blowout on Super Tuesday, or we might as well see what happens. What do we have to lose? That might be her thinking, perhaps. But, you know, a little bit of rationality at this juncture, it just pretty much isn't going to happen. So I imagine she'll drop out shortly as well, barring some sort of surprise. So that's going to be the contest. Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg endorsed Vice President Joe Biden today. So is he going to be, you know, that center lane, that contrast from Bernie Sanders off of his big win this weekend in the South Carolina primary? Is that enough to propel him, Biden, to be a true contender of Sanders? Or will Bloomberg and his money and his groundwork, his machine, is he going to be the second man against Sanders? Because Sanders is most definitely the front runner. He has the grassroots network. He has the money as well. And he is just tapping into something. Again, he is the other side of Donald Trump. People are wound up. They feel an emotional connection with him. And that is very powerful in politics. And then you have somebody like a Bloomberg who is there. And the way he should frame it is, look, I'm not the charismatic guy. I'm not the guy with the great smile. I'm not 6 foot tall, dark and handsome. That's not me. That's not me. But I am a calm, steady hand, and I know how to manage, and I know how to delegate, and I am not chaotic. I am saying I can return us to some semblance of normalcy in this country. I don't decree law by tweet. I delegate. I get people smarter than me in a room. Donald Trump thinks he's always the smartest person in the room, so that's a huge contrast. And Bloomberg, to a degree, is making that argument, but I think he has to be a little bit more forceful. I think he has to come out and say, look, I'm not the charismatic guy. I'm not XYZ, but I'm the guy who's going to get it done. I'm the guy who has the experience of being self-built, self-made, and I'm worth $60 billion. That's the American dream. I built a business. I built a better mousetrap. People want my product. They want my service. I give a lot of my money for philanthropy. I'm giving most of my money away when, you know, when he passes away. All this stuff. And if you can start checking off all those boxes, it is a stark contrast to the current incumbent at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But with these recent endorsements and with people dropping out, well, Biden, yeah, maybe he's getting maybe he's going to get another little spring in his step. Maybe he's going to be somewhat of the comeback kid. I'm a little hesitant on that because he doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the ground game in a lot of these other states. But anything can happen. If he got some big victories or really does better than what people are anticipating tomorrow, well, then maybe the donors will open up their checkbook and they'll take care of him. But it's politics. Time will tell. Crazy week last week. It's going to be crazy here. It's going to be crazy next week. Just get used to it. Just get used to it. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.